Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and as always, with me...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304, also known by a number of other nicknames which are not really relevant to this particular audience. Hello.
Hi Ben, how are you doing?
I am doing very well. I've eaten some dinner, I'm home from work, I'm drawing some pictures, I'm actually animating... I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. I'm awake. I'm in my apartment. I've had breakfast, and I am currently awaiting the arrival of my bed and dresser. So, today's going to be a good day, I think. I'm probably going to be doing some furniture... Well, not probably. I'm definitely going to be doing some furniture assembly later in the day. And, so probably going to get some game work done in the meantime while I wait. So, I'm... Dude, looking forward to that. Except I should probably get out and go shopping or something so I can at least justify my weak Metro Pass. But enough of these first world problems. Yes. We've got a podcast to do.
We have, and it's a podcast about gaming and particularly adventure gaming.
Yes, you're absolutely...
Hello. Let's get on with the show.
Let's get on with the show.
Do you know what I got? Do you know what I got for myself?
What?
I got myself a new game. I bought myself a new game. It's only a recent release out on GOG and on Steam for a special introductory price or some rubbish like that that they suck you in and take all your money with. It's called The Inner World, and it's a point-and-click adventure. And I finished it today after work. It took me, I don't know, it was probably 5 or 6 hours of fairly involved puzzling.
I have seen this game advertised heavily on AdventureGamers.com, and I have to say it looks very interesting. The graphics look nice and cartoony, and it looks like, I don't know, it looks like the characters are like little things.
Things?
What's that?
Things?
Yeah, they look... Things? Well, they don't look human. They look like little bits of things. I don't know. What are the characters supposed to be?
They're sort of people, I guess. I didn't really question that. It doesn't matter. You don't have to pigeonhole their genre. Their sort of, you know, their genetic background is no...
Well, the reason I ask this is because the title is The Inner World, so it made me wonder if perhaps it took place inside, like, the human body or something, and they were meant to be, like, little T-cells or something, you know?
It actually takes place in a sort of anti-world, where the world is a globe, but the inside of a globe. So the whole inner of the globe is the world, and then... It's like an inverted version of what we live.
Okay.
And, yeah, you play as a young chap with a flute for a nose.
Okay.
And you adventure through it. And I really, 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 really liked it. It reminded me, I think I told you this before, it reminds me of a cross between the styles of sort of The Secret of Kells and of Nocturna, which are films, mm-hmm. in case... You know, me being a film expert, I reference things to films regularly. There's no need for that nasal noise. And also reminds me across, like, the style of sort of Puzzle Agent and Machinarium mix.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I would really, really, really recommend, if you're like me and you're a fan of, like, complex, puzzly sort of adventures, and keep in mind that I just came off playing, like, Kyrandia games, which I really enjoyed. So it's quite similar in style to those that sort of puzzling. Give The Inner World a trial. Try. Okay. So then, have you been playing anything exciting?
No, I haven't been playing anything exciting. But it brings me to my point, So last podcast, you made reference to Shakespeare, and I said Shakespeare was boring. But Shakespeare had a play, if I'm not mistaken.
He had more than one.
He only had one good one. I'm burying myself deeper.
Wow. Wow. Did you get told off about that, by the way?
No, I didn't get told off about that.
Just, except for me. Good thing I'm here. You got told off for them by proxy by me. So
yeah. Anyway. One of Shakespeare's many plays, if I'm not mistaken, this quote came from A Midsummer Night's Dream, and it's, "To thine own self be true." Okay. And I feel that we have violated Shakespeare's mantra of "to thine own self be true," because you have watched a film, and not just any film. you have watched a Will Ferrell film.
I did.
Yes, tell us your story first, and then I'll tell you. Fine.
I left work. I finished work the other day at the job I've been working at, and we finished up. And the person I've been working for, daughter, came up and said, "Benny, are you staying for dinner?" And I said, "I don't know. You tell me, am I staying for dinner or not?" And so apparently I was told that I was staying for dinner. So I stayed for dinner, and we ate dinner, and we all had a good old laugh around the dinner table. And they said, "Oh, have you seen a film called Step Brothers?" And I have to say, these people really, really, really like the film, because they've told me about it like a million times, and I'm like, it sounds like a Will Ferrell film. And I'm not a fan of films, so saying I'm not a fan of Will Ferrell films doesn't say anything, you know. So I know what Will Ferrell's like, and I'm like, but anyway, they said, "Ben, take this DVD and return it to us the next time you come water skiing with us." So I grabbed the DVD and I took it home. And then tonight after work, I finished The Inner World, and I'm like, I need to do animation, but I'm also a bit tired. I just relax for a bit. What can I do while I relax? What should I do? And so in the film went, and I watched the film, and I laughed out loud at the very, very, very last line of the film. So I guess it was worth it all for that one little bit. It's a lot like intercourse, really. Lots and lots of effort for 3 seconds of...
Three seconds? Do we need to have a talk?
We do need to have a talk. I've got issues. Well, I did laugh a lot at the Will Ferrell film.
Nice, yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, I haven't been true to myself because I've been watching television. But not live. See... I've been watching Breaking Bad on
Netflix. Now, is Breaking Bad the one about meth labs?
Yes.
Okay. Why is this show so popular?
Well, see, I asked myself that same question because I had never seen an episode.
It's a show about meth labs.
The series finale the series just finished the day before yesterday, Sunday, and...
Well, you're up with it all.
Eh?
You started watching it just as the series finished. What are you?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it's only 5 seasons long, and each season's only like 12 episodes, so...
That's a lot of television watching time.
Yeah, it is. But it's not like, say, Dexter, which just finished, which I had watched every single episode of, which was 8 seasons worth. And
hey, how many seasons... Yeah, I heard. How many seasons did House have?
House also had 8 seasons.
Because I had an urge to watch House the other day. I was like, I should watch House. I haven't watched House in years.
House had 8 seasons, but House was network television, so it had like 20-something episodes per season. So it was a lot more...
You liked House, didn't you?
I did like House.
I liked House. I like what I saw of House. I thought...
And I like the ending of House, too.
Can I be honest?
Yes?
I didn't recognize Hugh Laurie at first. I started watching House. I'm like, he's a guy. He looks awesome. Yeah.
He does do a scarily good American accent.
His accent is phenomenal.
It really is. I mean, it was a little iffy during the first few episodes, during the first season, but...
You probably pick it better than I do, being...
Well, yeah.
To me, anybody that talks with a half-American accent sounds perfectly American, so...
Yeah, and anybody who talks with a normal American accent, you're like, oh my god, they're so American!
I do say that. I've been known to say that.
You have been.
I've said that to you about actual real life people in real life that are actual real life Americans.
You haven't, yet you've never told me that, which boggles my mind.
Well, I talk to you all the time, so I'm kind of used to it. I think I remember the first time I talked to you, and the first AGSer I ever spoke to on the telephone was Ken Disco. He rang me on the telephone from Michigan.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And I was like, oh my god, I'm
a distance call.
I'm talking to an AGSer. But yeah, he was. I was like, oh wow, he's very American. And now I'm used to talking to Ken. I talk to him all the time, so you know. Anyway,
going back.
Sorry, I've derailed the podcast again. This is my new, that's my like. If this was Dungeons and Dragons, that would be my special ability, unique to my character, not a class based ability.
Do me a favor and never become a train conductor, because people are gonna die. Anyway, so I started watching Breaking Bad because, like you, I was like, well, what is this show? Why is everybody raving about the show if it's a show about meth?
Sure.
And so I watched the entirety of the first season yesterday, which was only 7 episodes. And I have to say, I'm hooked. I just...
Wow, it's, man, it doesn't take much to get you hooked. You're like a little fishy. Delicious bait. I need it.
Yum. Well, remember, I'm coming off of Dexter, which was awful. But no, to give the show its credit, it's extremely well-written. It's incredibly well-acted. I mean, the main character, Bryan Cranston, I mean, I knew him from Malcolm in the Middle, but he's amazing as...
Man, that's an old show.
Yeah, well, he was the dad on Malcolm in the Middle. He's the main character in this show. He is, like, amazing. And it's funny, too, because it's actually funny. Like, it's a drama, but it has a bunch of comedic moments in it. So it's like...
I find dramas quite funny. I always laugh at the overacting. It's hideous.
No, but that's the thing. There's no overacting here. It's all very natural. It's all very good acting. But there's some absurd situations that are just like, oh, man, this is crazy. I shouldn't be laughing at this. But anyway, this isn't a TV review podcast. And I'm about 6 years late to the party on Breaking Bad. But my point is, that's pretty much what's going to consume all my time in the next few days, I think, because I have four more seasons to get through.
I just finished an animation.
Good.
Right.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, the only show that I ever watched, like sat down and watched episode for episode in a row was Scrubs. I liked Scrubs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never got
Scrubs.
Never
was cute.
Scrubs.
Scrubs was cute, and Scrubs appealed to my particular sense of humor.
Yeah, I can see that.
And he has an alarm clock that's the Sugar Hill Gang coming at the top of it, which is, I don't know what to say.
Except hip hop, hip, the hippie to the hip to, etc.
Yeah. That.
Sure. Anyway, this is a game podcast or something. Hello. So let's talk about adventure games.
So I like
the reason. Actually, I wanted to say that one of the main reasons I was also interested in watching Breaking Bad is because the protagonist, Walter White, he starts off as this very, you know, pushover, very, you know, nerdy kind of science teacher, chemistry teacher. And, you know, he's working two jobs and he's a shell of his former self because, you know, you get revealed more through the show that he used to be, you know, a scientist and he worked at a lab and all this stuff. So over the course of the series, I mean, not to spoil anything because obviously everyone knows the ending and I don't, but he clearly becomes more and more of the antagonist as the series goes on, which is an interesting transformation for the main character. So I want to watch the series for research purposes to kind of get an idea of how to make your character go from being a sympathetic protagonist to an unsympathetic, not necessarily antagonist, but at least an anti-hero, because that's very much something I'm interested in portraying in A Golden Wake. And it's not easy to get right, especially in something, I mean, if you have a TV series that lasts 5 seasons, that's, you know, that's a good more than 5 years.
Yes.
So you have plenty of time and plenty of episodes to do things. But in an adventure game where, you know, maximum playtime is, what, like 8 hours if you're lucky, it's a lot harder to do that so
quickly. This is something that always gets me, though, because you will go and watch a film that runs for 90 minutes, and they can do a lot in 90 minutes. But because the 90 minutes, they get the control of the pace, you know, I think they can do a lot more in those 90 minutes. Whereas in an adventure game, for example, sort of you might have 8 hours, but only maybe 45 minutes of that will be developing characters. And yeah, the rest of it, you'll be wandering around going, damn it, what the hell do I need this for?
Yeah, because really, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's pace is a tricky thing in adventure games because, like you say, you're playing puzzles, and then if you finish the puzzles, you're rewarded with maybe a cutscene or something where the character has dialogue and stuff. But
I think that's why it's so rewarding when you see a game that really ties in gameplay with the story.
Can you think of any examples of games that do this well?
Well, I think the Quantic Dream games, I know we mentioned them last episode, but I think they do it fairly well. I mean, you know, David Cage and his co-workers, I guess, have you sort of really adopting the entire role, whether it be taking a shower or, you know, doing tarot cards or anything like that, you know. He really tries to put you in the everyday lives of his characters, sometimes to good effect and sometimes to not so good effect. I really like playing as Scott in Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a really just the stuff like changing a baby's diaper, their house and stuff like that.
Or having to take your asthma medication.
Yeah, just basic stuff like that. You know, I think that really, not only is it adding to the gameplay, but it's fleshing out character. And not in a Guybrush Threepwood hates porcelain fleshing out character. I mean, in an actual believable way.
I think that was Guybrush's only real character development throughout the whole series, to be fair.
You know what? I think you might be right. I can't really name many of Guybrush's traits. He wants to be a pirate.
He wants to be a pirate. He
hates porcelain.
Yeah, and it's never really explained why.
And yet he's a well-loved character. I don't get it. I think because he's such a blank slate, that he's a young guy with ambition, that a young person with ambition can easily project themselves onto their character, much like the silent Gordon Freeman.
Absolutely. And he's a big dork, and adventure games are big dorks most of the time, so they can relate to him as well.
You get home from school from being bullied, and you get into this world where you'd be bullied, but you overcome the bullies, and you're like, yeah, I'm a man. My true mind have mutinied on me, but now I've got the treehouse.
That's the most depressing thing I've ever heard.
No, it's not. Are you kidding me? Have you played any of my games?
were you bullied at school?
Well, I think everybody's bullied at some point in their life. Just some people don't give a shit if they get bullied or not.
At school.
Were you?
I'm not getting bullied right now.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
You are.
I'm not.
You smell like butts.
Well, you smell like cat food.
Well, delicious.
Why do you think Monty's always licking you?
Yeah, man. I don't know where he went. He was in here before, and he climbed up on my lap, and then he took off. He's crazy. He's crazy, that Gato. I don't know where I was going with it, but yeah, I think stuff like David Cage, and as silly as some of his games are, as you know, I really think that that sort of, and it's just, I don't know. I think I forget what the topic was about.
Character development in adventure games.
But yeah, I in any games, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's always annoying to me if I'm playing a mega violent game and then I get into a cutscene and my character is portrayed as a really sensitive person. That really upsets me.
Like Grand Theft Auto 4.
Well, no, I don't want to single the game out. But Grand Theft Auto 4 is one example of that. Man, I want the gameplay. If I'm playing, you know, I'd rather play a big dumb soldier than some sensitive guy if I'm shooting the shit out of everyone, you know. I'd rather play someone that's desperate, you know. I want to feel that the character is immersed in the situation, you know. I think, like, Sam and Max are completely ridiculous with everything they do in their games, but you don't for 1 minute believe that they're not immersed. You know, even though they're poking fun at everything, they still feel like a wholesome part of the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that helps tie the gameplay to something as well. If the character is doing something that's believable for them, you know, so yeah, I was going to mention something from Golden Wake, but I don't want to spoil your game, so I'll stop there and let you talk.
What were you going to mention? I'm curious.
The scene with the bank and the
Oh right, of course.
Yeah, you know, there's a ton of different ways of seeing a scene in which there's some conflict or some drama could go. And there are realistic ways to react, and there are unrealistic ways to react. And I think it's important to sit down and go, what's my character type? How would he or she react in this sort of situation? And then build your gameplay around that.
Right. Well, in that case, I mean, I'm kind of leaving it up to the player.
You are. But you know, but there's still realistic options that you've provided.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Because there used to be a very silly option that got cut.
Well, you're grimness, love. Are you kidding me?
What's that supposed to mean?
You have a silly sense of humor. Which is why we get along so well. Quite frank.
But yeah. Anyway, yeah. Well, the thing was that, yeah, there was... It wasn't silly in the sense that it was ridiculous sense of humor-wise. It was silly in the sense that it was very... adventure gamey, non-realistic.
I think a lot of the times too, people fall into that trap where they design a game that feels just like an adventure game.
Yeah, but if you're doing a game that's more or less set in realistic, it's got a realistic tone and it's set in a more or less serious setting, and it's a not a drama necessarily, but it's more on the dramatic side than the comedy side, then yeah, having something like that is kind of out of the blue and a bit silly. What's it's more a place in like an Indiana Jones game than a game about a real estate agent, to be honest.
What's your favorite adventure game?
You've asked me this so many times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one.
Mine's Full Throttle.
I don't have one.
Grim Fandango might be yours.
Grim Fandango is high up on the list, but I wouldn't say it's my absolute be-all, end-all favorite. I mean, I have a lot
Gabriel Knight. Gabriel Knight.
I really like the first Gabriel Knight, yeah.
I know you do, yeah.
And I like the third one, too, but not as much, obviously.
My cat's back up on my lap again, by the way.
Good. Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of favorites. I have a top five, I would say.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't, yeah.
Why did you start playing adventure games, though? I'm curious. Because you grew up with a Nintendo. You're like a Mega Man kid, so you grew up with Twitch game, whereas I was a PC gamer, so it was natural for me to gravitate towards adventure games. Why? Was it the exploration? That's my thing. I love exploration.
I just loved the idea of being able to solve puzzles by using items on other items.
Oh my god, that's the worst. Oh, ha, ha, ha.
No, I'm serious. Like, that's just the idea of being able to overcome obstacles by picking up inventory items and applying them in non-conventional ways just was so cool to me.
Dude, my cat's licking my nose.
Yeah, because you smell like cat food.
For me, it was... Do you remember Beavis and Butthead's Virtual Stupidity?
I've never played it, no.
Oh, that's such a fun game. That's a fantastic game. I mean,
I remember it. Don't get me wrong. I remember reading about it and seeing it, but I never played it.
Wow. See, that was my first real adventure game experience, and it was on a demo disc. And this was a pretty amazing demo disc. It was like an introduction to like Windows 95, basically, and they had like this, they built this interactive spaceship you could walk around.
Oh, nice.
And it had two hidden rooms. It was by Monolith. And I think it was by Monolith. And there were certain rooms you could like go into which had arcade machines, and you go up to the arcade machine and you press play and it installs a demo, which is amazing, you know, as kids. And this is how amazing, like how new all of this felt in the 90s, is I just used to walk around the spaceship just looking at the arcade machines and not playing them. I'd just walk around.
I have a similar story. I was already into adventure games, and my grandfather had bought himself a Sega Genesis My grandfather was really into baseball.
There was this
game on the Sega Genesis called Sports Talk Baseball, which was like the best baseball simulator on the Genesis at the time.
Okay.
So he had Sports Talk Baseball, and he had a few other games. And my grandfather also liked... My grandparents used to like going to Las Vegas, so my grandfather used to like gambling and stuff. So he had this game that was it was some sort of casino thing. But what was cool was, instead of just being like, you know, a menu, choose your casino game, you actually played as like this overweight guy in a shirt and tie and pants who walked around the casino, and you could go up to the machines and play machines.
And I remember that was the best part about the 90s.
I remember loading up the game and not being interested in the games at all. I just liked walking around the casino as this fact. And my grandfather was like, why are you walking around the whole casino? Why don't you play games? And I was like, I like walking around as the guy.
Man, that's exactly me with this thing. But that was why I was so interested in computer games, because you're exploring this world. And so when I was playing Beavis and Butthead, this demo of this, and my dad used to play this with us because he used to laugh at the jokes, because he, you know, he's got the same sense of humor as me, pretty much, you know. So I'd be there with my brother and my dad, and you'd click on stuff, and Beavis and Butthead would say stupid stuff, and we'd all crack up laughing. And I just loved the idea that there were all these hidden interactions you could say, and, you know, Mike Judge's voice would come on as Beavis or Butthead or McVicker or something like that. Yeah. And you'd get these funny responses. And we just the idea of exploring a world and finding how many different hidden responses and stuff like that. And I feel that's a little lost now. Like, these days, it's not really about that. I play a game to solve puzzles, and I kind of wish that I could go back to that thing where I was just happy walking around Highland High School, listening to what they had to say. I mean, and to be fair, it didn't hurt the fact that Mike Judge just liked writing stupid shit for comedy, so There was a lot of dumb jokes in there that made it appealing to a kid that thought butts and farting was the funniest two things in the entire world, and still does.
You mean they're not? But,
well, there you go. But yeah, so I think that in itself really builds. You get a character like Beavis or like Butthead, and they're pretty simple guys. I won't try and pass them off as high art or anything like that. But every single thing you click on in those games reinforces their character.
Hmm.
And I think games kind of miss that by going, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Instead of giving some... But I mean, like I said, Beavis and Butthead are quite shallow characters, so it's quite easy to write a response for something like that, you know, because you just make it a dick joke or something like that. But even so, they used to go the extra mile, and like you'd get these amazing, like you get extra animations and stuff like that. And I loved it. I loved this idea of just walking around the world and exploring. I didn't care about solving the puzzles. It was like years before I ever finished the demo.
Wow.
Because I was just happy just walking around and, you know. And it was the same when I first played Sam and Max Hit the Road. I just loved...
Man. I used to play the demo over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And over. Even though it was only three rooms, but it was amazing.
Yeah. No, that's just, yeah. And the best thing about Sam and Max Hit the Road is it's one of those, I like to think of them as road trip games, where you're doing this huge road trip around America. There was a few road trip games done in the 90s, like Big Race USA and stuff like that, which were basically about going, and Sam and Max really embraced that concept, and I loved it for that, you know. You go to these hokey tourist trap locations and solve, well, inverted commas, the crime, whilst, you know, engaging in all sorts of illegal activities.
Yes.
Being Sam and Max, but yeah, that's and again with Sam and Max, it's a comedy game, so it's quite easy to write for Sam and Max because they're both psychopaths. But you get this gameplay where every click reinforces their character. I can walk around Sam and Max games clicking on things, even the Telltale ones, you know.
Yeah, but it's a lot easier to do that in games where the main character narrates, as opposed to games where you have a narrator.
I haven't written many games with a narrator. I've only done two, I think.
All my games have a narrator. I've never actually done... Well, that's not true. I've done a couple of games where the main character narrates.
The Rebirth didn't have a narrator.
No, the Rebirth didn't have a narrator, nor did Ben Chandler, Paranormal Investigator, but...
Did Backdoor Man have one?
Backdoor Man had one, but it was his inner monologue. So it was kind of... Half and half, yeah. But, I mean, it's sort of easy to kind of convey the character's thought process through a narrator, because you can say, you know, something like, you think this, or you're taken aback by this, or whatever, so you can kind of... I like having a narrator, because having narrator text separate from dialogue text just makes it feel more like you're, I don't know, reading a novel or something, which I like.
One thing that amazes me is how easy it is for writers to write a good book and how hard it is for like game developers to do a thing. But I think because we don't have much, you know, there's not much animation, and in a book they can convey it all with words, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Whereas, although some of the stuff that Andy Serkis has done with his motion capture in games is pretty good, so.
That's right, you've been playing King Kong, haven't you?
I haven't played it yet, no, but I'm talking about some of the other work he's done. I plan on playing King Kong, and I've had it sitting on my shelf for about, you know, 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And being a fan of Michel Ancel's work, I really should play it.
So talking about, you were mentioning you were playing Beavis and Butthead with your brother and your dad. I remember one of the first adventure game experiences I had was Hugo's House of Horrors. And I remember, don't laugh. It's a terrible game, but it was great when you were a kid. That game taught me how to type fast, man. Good. Let me tell you. Because there were some scenes where you had to type. Like, there was this one scene underground where the mummy comes at you and you have to type something really fast. Or where the dog is charging at you and you have to throw a stake at the dog. So, my fast typing skills today are due to the Hugo games.
I'm glad.
But anyway, I remember playing the Hugo's House of Horrors, and I remember my mom playing with me at some point. And we were exploring the house, and we go into the bathroom, and I was like, haha, a toilet, pee in toilet. And the response was something like, ah, that feels better. And we both cracked up laughing because it was a funny response. So, yeah, I think also, I mean, there was a lot more opportunity for parser games to have hidden responses and stuff like that. I mean, look at like Leisure Suit Larry, for example, is infamous for that sort of thing. Even though I didn't play Leisure Suit Larry until I don't remember how old I was. I think I must have been like 15 or 16 when I downloaded Leisure Suit Larry 1 AGI, and I was like, oh boy, boobies, and yeah, nothing.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
For
reasons. Yeah. So anyway, it's cool. It's true. It's like, I think you're right. I think people nowadays are more interested, or at least game designers are more invested in putting in their puzzles and stuff and not really making their world as interactive. Cause there's really, like you say, there's nothing as frustrating as when you try something and you get, oh no, I can't do that, or that doesn't work, or whatever. The generic, I can't do that response for whatever the game is. Because, yeah, I mean, games that go out of their way to have a response for everything get praised nowadays because it's so
rarity.
Few games that do that anymore, yeah.
And keep in mind, I've been playing, like, the Carandia games, and there's lots of extra funny stuff. It's fun, I was playing Carandia too, and you told me about steaming the letters open. And I really enjoyed seeing a reference to Lands of Lore by opening one of the letters up. I was like, hey, that's a sort of preface to Lands of Lore, Throne of Chaos. So that was really cute. It's cute seeing stuff like that in games, where, you know, just a little extra thing that's totally hidden.
Yep.
And, yeah, I think game designers should embrace their inner child a little more. You know what really gets me? This really blows me away.
What is it?
I've written a fair few, like, lines of dialogue for games. You know, I've written quite a few game scenes in my time.
Sure.
Like an old man, I'm sound like now, but... you know what amazes me?
What grinds your gears?
This is what grinds my gears, is songwriters can move me more in 3.5 minutes than most game writers can move me over 60 hours.
Wow.
Well, you think about it, a 3-minute song can move me. I don't know about you, but I find, you know...
No, I'm cold and dead on the inside, so I don't really get
that.
My music. But,
but yeah, no, I that always
no,
gets
see,
me.
Actually, it's funny you say that, because I find myself... I've been moved by music before, but I'm more moved by instrumental music than I am by lyrics.
Okay.
Like, you know how I feel about Luminol's 8 minutes and 30 seconds bit. I mean, that gets me every time, but...
Yeah.
Really, that whole album, actually, like, I love that album, and I love the music in it, but I can't say that any of the lyrics are particularly memorable or even...
Really?
Moving to me, anyway. Yeah.
I feel they're quite advanced in terms of lyrics for progressive rock, because progressive rock, by and large, is ridiculously overdramatic and overwritten and just...
Well, I mean, most of my favorite progressive rock music, the lyrics are not the strong point for them, in my opinion.
Yeah, I find progressive rock is a little too sort of I don't know, yeah, just overdramatic for my taste, but I think Wilson has very good taste in writing lyrics. He's very everyday. He doesn't try and dress it up more than it is. Whereas
I understand songwriters, and I understand their need to express themselves, because it's like any other artistic
thing. Well, you
can express yourself in many ways, song being a very popular one.
Yeah.
But honestly, I've never found myself listening to a song and thinking, wow, those lyrics are powerful, man.
You know,
that's amazing, you know? Maybe I'm just broken, but I just don't. I mean...
There's a thing in a song. Do you know the band Deftones at all?
Yeah, well, I've heard of them.
That was kind of a new metal kind of hip-hop metal crossover, but I quite like... I picked that up, but I quite like their White Pony album. And there's a song on there that was very famous called Change in the House of Flies. And there's a line in there where he says quite quietly, give you the gun, blow me away. And in the lyrics booklet, they played a little joke where anything that was a little raunchy in the lyrics or anything like that, they sort of softened up when they wrote it out in the lyrics booklet.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually wrote that line out as, give you the lungs to blow me away. And I was like, that's a much better line. Why wouldn't you have put that in the song? It's lovely. It's so much prettier, you know.
Yeah. I'll tell you a little story, and I hope to God that the people in this story are not do not listen to this podcast. I'm sure they don't, but just in case, I'll disguise it a little bit. So, as you know, when I moved to New York, I was staying somewhere. And I was staying with
Roman.
Yes, I was staying with Roman, and but a musical version of Roman.
Right, Roman.
So, yeah, there was some music involved, and the music was, in my opinion, quite cheesy. And sure. I let you listen in on some of the music.
I enjoyed the fact that you let me listen in. I'll say that. I did. Thank you. Yes. I never thank you for that. I'll thank you now while people are listening.
Oh, well, you're welcome, I guess, although I don't know that I did you any favors by letting you listen in. Anyway, so the people in question are songwriters, singers and songwriters. And so they write their own music and they write their own songs, and it just is so cheesy to me. It's cheesy. I'm sorry, it's cheesy. But
it's fun.
One day, one person came up to me and was like, "Hey, I have these lyrics. I want you to, I'm going to tell you these lyrics, and I want you to tell me what you think this song is about." And he told me, he sang me the song, and I was like, "Okay, this is what I think." And he was like, "Yeah, well, it's this," and he went lyric by lyric and explained them to me, and I was just like, "That just really loses everything to me." But now okay, great. Like,
you're a harsh critic, Francisco.
I know.
Have you ever written a song other than like your comedy songs, which
I have actually.
Okay. You've written a song, seriously. I see, I've written songs before, but I generally, if I'm writing lyrics, I have a tendency to abandon any hope of making a serious song and just run with it, you know.
I'm usually the same way, but this one song that I wrote kind of turned out sort of serious with comedy elements to it, I suppose. it was basically a
Ben breakup. Jordan, the musical.
No, it was a breakup song.
Okay.
You know, one of those "I never want to see you again, go away" sort of thing. I actually wrote it for a friend of mine who was being kind of stalked by a girl, and so I wrote it just kind of on a whim, and I was just, yeah. So, but essentially it's one of those "go away, I never want to see you again" type songs.
Very empowering.
Yeah, so. Sure. But it's called "I'm Out of Shaving Cream," so that...
Oh, I think you told me about this.
Yeah. It's basically the guy saying that he's out of shaving cream and he doesn't want to leave his house to buy more because that means he'll see the girl that he broke up with, and it includes the line... Let's get a little insight into Grunislav's life here. The Grunislav. One line that I was particularly proud of, or one rhyme I was particularly proud of, was, "A razor on my face could never hurt as much as the pain that goes through me whenever I feel your touch."
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's pretty emo, actually.
I know, it was totally... But the music itself was pretty upbeat. But yeah, anyway.
I've heard your grunge strumming.
Nah.
It's triumphant.
I need to bring my guitar up to New York.
Your guitar playing is triumphant, if nothing else.
Yeah, so, man, I celebrate it.
You do, you really do. Do you have any moments in games that you've written that you're particularly proud of?
Oh.
Or any just general setups that you're really proud of?
I think I've told the story about the one joke in Backdoor Man that I'm really proud of that no one gets that is just, I think, is hilarious.
Tell me.
It's the bit where you're with the man and you have the option of several options to talk your way out of, you know, saying that you're a prostitute with his wife.
Sure.
And you can mention the painting. If you look at the guy's painting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if you look at the painting, that's how you succeed, but, you know, the guy's sitting there, you only get this option if the guy has taken off his clothes, so the guy's lying there naked, and the wife's like, "What are you?" And you're like, "What are you doing with my husband?" And you're like, "I'm an artist," and she's like, "Well, where are your paintbrush Where's your easel and your paintbrush? And you can say, I'm a conceptual artist. And, yeah.
Does this have anything to do with your time in college?
It has to do with having studied art history, yeah, and being a total art history nerd, and, you know, throwing in little things like that.
Good.
There was also a little thing that I did that amused me in Ben Jordan, the remake of the second game, where this was a little bit of character fleshing out too, but really pathetic character fleshing out. But there was a bunch of stuff where, actually, I did it in Case 5 also, in the Japanese game show. Like, every time you got a question...
I love that Japanese game show.
Every time you got a question right, Ben was like, well, good thing that I was in the Harry Houdini fan club, or good thing I studied obscure diseases in my freshman year, stuff like that.
Although that seems a little more like comedy than actual character development, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely it was. And in Case 2, I did the same thing. Like, when you use the stethoscope on the safe, it's like, well, it looks like that year of pre-med paid off after all.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You know.
It's simple comedy.
It's simple comedy, but it also gives you a little bit more insight into Mr. Jordan's life.
That's good.
As ridiculous as it may be. What about you? You've written lots of games, and you've got plenty to be proud of. What are you proud of?
I don't know about proud of, but every time I think of the setup for PIS, like when I think of the introduction to the story, I really like the introduction. And I know I wrote it way too long, and I don't give a damn. You know, every time I think of the idea of someone that has dreams of really pleasant things and wakes up screaming about them and has no idea why. Mm-hmm. I really like that idea. You know, that's still... It's the sort of idea... No, never.
You've never woken up screaming?
And I don't really have dreams much. And when I do, they're usually quite grotesque.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I've had some grotesque dreams in my time.
I've never really had nightmares, but I mean, I've had dreams in which I've been stabbed and stuff like that, but I never woke up scared or anything like that.
Yeah, I've had dreams where I've gotten shot, but yeah, I never wake up scared either. Oh man, I had a dream the other night that I left my apartment, but it was weird because I was staying in a hotel, but my hotel was essentially my apartment, and I left all my hats in a closet, and I didn't take them with me, and I got all sad because I had lost my hat collection. I had left them behind.
You really should find your mirror and take a good look at yourself, I think.
I've already done that 3 times today.
That's because you're a narcissist, but I mean...
It's also because I'm not wearing any clothes, baby. Ooh.
Well, there's something. Anyway. Adios, pantalones.
Oh, man, I said that like 12 hours ago.
That's good.
Anyhow, I interrupted you.
Let's move on.
Please continue.
I don't really... what I really like is if people find the little jokes that I've hidden in my games that I've forgotten about, or going back and playing games that I made, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And the best thing about it is that I've forgotten all the jokes, and all the jokes were written by me, so they cater perfectly to my own sense of humor. So I spend the whole time giggling like an idiot. And, you know, that made me laugh. Paul, who I made Trans-Pacific with, sent me an email after I made the exclamation point game. I was like, oh man, I really like the interaction with the bench. I thought that was very clever. I'm like, interaction with the bench? I don't remember that. So I started the game up and I went and clicked on the bench, and the robot says, in my former life, I was a bench handler. And I was like, that's ridiculous.
Wow, I can't believe I never thought about that before.
Yeah, but that's I like hiding stuff in my games, and often I forget that I've hidden it. You know, if someone emails me about that, you know. Also, I like all the extra stuff in games like City, where you can write graffiti on the wall, and hallucinate if you drink 3 colas, there's a label.
My God, that's like essentially you.
Oh man, if you play my games, you'll notice there's quite a bit of soda consumed. Mentioned in the games, and there's a reason for this. Would you say I drink a fair bit of soda, given the chance, given the opportunity?
I would, actually, yes.
You've seen me down a 2 liter of Coca-Cola. So.
I've seen you down a 2 liter of Coca-Cola. Yes, I've shared a 2 liter of Coca-Cola with you. And
yeah, man, how much?
Then again, you've seen me down to 750 milliliters of 4X too. So
yeah, which says more about your judgment than about your stomach, your capacity. How much free soda did I get in Sydney? That was amazing. I love free soda.
You got all the free soda.
I was the king of the free soda of Sydney.
Yep.
It's good. I'm like halfway through my third animation during this podcast. This is a good podcast. Now,
given the giant Coca-Cola billboard that was our landmark for where we were staying.
Oh man, did I tell you that I ordered a new Coca-Cola shirt? I'm pretty excited about this.
You didn't, actually, no.
Oh man, I've ordered a new Coca-Cola shirt. I'm pretty excited. The Fallout fan in me is pretty excited about this. I was going to say something.
Soda?
Delicious.
Your games about being... I should go back and play all of your games again, because I did a marathon playthrough of your games.
You did. It was very cute. You sent me a lovely email. This was before we really talked much.
Yeah.
Do you remember the back in the days of Stickam when you and I designed Admiral Flapjack together?
Yes. Yes.
Before we even knew who each other was. I mean, I knew who you were, but you didn't.
Yeah, and I had an inkling of who you were, but I hadn't played any of your games. I just knew you as the guy who released a hell of a lot of games.
I hadn't really released many games back then, though. You were the guy that released hell. Man, I remember I'm going to interrupt you right now, and I'm going to say, in 2008, I was on IRC, and someone was like, oh man, you've released a game. I was like, yeah, I'm going to release another game this year, which I did. We did it for Oro. And AGA, Berrien, said in the thing, he said, oh man, it's not going to happen. The only person that ever releases two games a year is Grundeslov.
Ha!
So there you go. You got a reputation.
I do, especially with AGA. Oh man, I can tell you some stories about that guy.
Probably best to leave it off the podcast.
I ever tell you about the time I licked his eyeball?
Maybe.
I'll tell you after the podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now all our listeners are going to be like, what's the story?
Well, they can imagine it for themselves.
Yeah, come on. Just imagine someone licking eyeballs. That's all you need to know.
Exactly. Anyway, so I played through all of your games in 2010.
No, 2010, something like that.
Might have been. I know it has to have been 2009 or 2010 because I played them all at work at my office, and I started working as an interpreter in March of 2009. So it was sometime between March of 2009 and 2011 or so when we actually started Skyping regularly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I played through all of them, and I really enjoyed them all, and I sent you a little silly PM saying, oh, your games are really cool, her, 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 dar, dar, dar,
her, her,
dar, dar,
very sweet. And I was like, oh, wow, the guy whose lamppost inspired you, lamppost and everything, has played my games and enjoyed them.
Yeah. So, but that was before, we got to know each other and before we... Actually,
you clearly misjudged me. Very, very.
Oh, I absolutely
very,
did.
Very, very, very far off the mark. Very wide.
I absolutely did. I played all your games, and I was like, man, this guy is must be some sort of serious, deep intellectual type guy. it's all this hidden meaning and all this symbolism. Man, I played Heat, and I was like, oh my god, this is really deep stuff. And Shifter's Box, and I was like, oh man. And then I get to know you, and it's cat meow.
That's just summed up my life.
Can I tell you something though?
Please.
And this is falling back into episode 16, disgusting bromance territory again.
Delicious.
I'm very glad that I misjudged you, because if you had been how I thought you were. I think you would have been a lot more boring to talk to and to hang out.
Probably. You would have seen my butt several times less than you have. You know what? I played Heat recently, and Heat is the game that I expected to enjoy the least of all my games that I went back and played. And actually, I really, really enjoyed it. The only thing I regret about Heat is that I explained everything at the end. I kind of wish I just left the ending open. You know, I wasn't brave enough to leave mystery in the story. The last two or three scenes resolves everything quite happily, whereas these days I would probably just leave it and go figure it out yourself.
Bitch,
I'm more of an asshole now. You get over sweet endings. I think you get over writing sweet endings.
Absolutely. But what I was going to say was that I should probably play through all your early games again now, knowing you as I do. and just probably get amusement out of picking up on things that I wouldn't have gotten before. Also, it's been several years since I played them, so I don't remember a lot of detail about them. So
I think when I replayed all of the Ben Jordan games last year, I think I enjoyed them more the second time with insight on the person. You know, it's interesting watching Tim Schafer talk. It's interesting, you know, it's really weird. Here's a weird thing. I read Ashton Razor's book.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic, you know. And it really appeals to my sense of reading. His sense of writing is very compatible with my sense of reading. And the weirdest thing about it is, and this has never happened to me before, is I got to chat with the author of a book I really liked. Mm-hmm. And I read a lot of books about the book that I just read. That was really weird. And it explained a lot of stuff that I'd missed. And I just thought, this is so surreal, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, really surreal. So, yeah, it's the same. You know, I went, before I started working on the latest Blackwell installment, I actually went and played the Blackwell games in order, because I'd played them before, but you need a refresher sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
And I think playing through them again, knowing Dave, I mean, I've known Dave since 2009 or something. Mm-hmm. I talk to him almost every day, although lately because he's been moving.
Yeah.
Like, he's moved 5 times in 3 months or something stupid.
I know, yeah. I haven't seen Dave in almost 2 weeks.
I chatted to him last night. He's like, oh, yeah, Granny's been coming to visit me. I'm like,
okay. Well, yeah, I'm coming to visit him. I've just been meeting up with him in different places.
Cafes. Yeah, but yeah, so yeah. It was interesting playing it with the inside of Dave's character. Yeah. And I get to play a lot of my friends' games now, and I really like it. That's one interesting thing about a community like the AGS community is you get to meet a lot of developers, like-minded developers and different-minded developers, and it's interesting talking to the people and playing their games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, actually, going back, I mean, well, it helps as a refresher course to go back and play your games, too, like from a design standpoint, too. If you're doing like, if you're being an idiot like me and making a really long series of games, sometimes it helps to go back and play them to pick up on little details that you put in that you might not necessarily remember.
Yeah, so, that makes sense. Yeah. I think Dave now is feeling with Blackwell that he's a little constricted by some of the restrictions he placed on himself early on in the series, and he's like, oh man, I got to get out of Blackwell.
Yeah.
Really should interview him and let him say this stuff, but I talk to him every day. What do you want? I'm the expert Daveologist.
Well, see, now I can invite him over to my place and he can sit next to me.
We can just do a podcast just like this. This would be amazing.
Yeah.
We won't have to organize anything. Not that I'm saying Dave Gilbert's hard to organize. Don't laugh at that.
I won't. Anyway, what was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh, I was going to say that I was actually considering the other day, I thought about getting a corkboard so that I could put up...
I've mentioned my corkboard.
I know you have a corkboard. I've seen your corkboard. It's the best corkboard I've ever seen.
And it's not a very big corkboard, but it's the style that matters.
Yeah, it's style over substance, to be honest.
It's hella stylish.
Please don't say hella. It's not 2001 anymore.
Oh, but I've spent too long listening to No Doubt's Hello Boot.
Ugh. Oh, man, don't talk to me about that song.
Why not? What's wrong with No Doubt's Hello Good?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. I remember hearing it on the radio, and I was like, man, this song's catchy. I love the bass line. This is great.
Yeah,
I went on Napster or something because, you know, it was 2001. I was in college, and I was poor.
Did Metallica put you in jail?
No, they didn't. Not yet, anyway. So I went on and I downloaded Hella Good, and I was like, oh yeah, this is great. And then I realized that it just repeats the same damn thing over and over and over again for 4 minutes. Yeah, even the lyrics are the same. And I was just this is shit. I don't want this song anymore. So I was very disillusioned with
it. Well, you grew up, you didn't grow up, but you spent a fair bit of your time listening to progressive music. Progressive music is rarely that repetitive. So
yeah, progressive. That's why it's called progressive.
Yeah.
Well, for the most part. Anyway, but yeah. I was thinking about getting a corkboard to help with my game design to put up post-it notes. Because I'm sure you saw that Vince 12 tweeted his post-it wall.
Yes, for
his
Vince 12's post-it wall.
And I thought, that's actually a really good idea. It's a good organizational tool.
You know, I'm a really old school sort of person when it comes to being organized. I love writing stuff down. I don't like typing it up. I don't like using any of these new little sort of executive style little programs that are meant to do it all for you. It does not interest me. You know, if you email, for example, if someone emailed me with a product, this will help you get organized. What are you laughing at? This will help you get organized. You know, if you're working in collaboration with something like or someone like that, you know, I really prefer to write it down on paper myself. You know, so.
Can I just say, yeah. You're an asshole, but I love you for it.
Man, here's the thing.
This anyway, is yeah. So,
some of the jokes in this show are for me and Francisco alone. Francisco and I alone.
You're right.
You don't. It's not all about you. Just saying.
Yeah,
we love you.
I'm not laughing at anything. I'm laughing because I'm a happy guy.
You're a happy guy. I'm a happy guy too.
Yeah, exactly.
And but who's not allowed to be happy? That's from the First Amendment, I'm sure of it.
It probably is.
It's First Amendment by President Bob Marley.
I don't worry think it's the amendment. Anything. But I think this country was founded on the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So there you go.
Well, I'm talking the global scale now. I'm talking about the global president, Bob Marley.
Oh, right, of course.
First Amendment, which was something, don't worry.
About a ting.
And because every little ting is going to be all right. These are the basic rights of our people.
You're absolutely right. But yeah, with a Golden Wake, I totally wrote it all down on a yellow notepad, and I feel that it makes it more genuine that way, to have a physical copy of your design document, which can be destroyed in a fire.
I don't really make it feel it makes more genuine. I just like drawing arrows to things and, you know, connecting stuff up and crossing things out and going, no, that doesn't look good. I'll do it like this. It's just natural for me, you know, and in between most of them, I have like passwords for PlayStation games, like PlayStation 1 games before, you know.
Actually, have you always written down your games, or do you actually have any Word documents with any design docs for your old games?
I don't have it. I throw things away. I'm terrible.
Because I was going to say, if you had any design documents for your old games on your computer, I still have my Ben Jordan design documents. We should release them to the public.
No, see, mine are all on paper. I don't put it on WordPad. It's all in notebooks.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I've got all my Ben Jordan ones on Notepad, and they're pretty terrible comparatively, but yeah.
Well, that's the whole point. You want to be getting better. It'd be pretty sad if you're getting worse.
Yeah. Oh, actually, going back to moments that I'm proud of, I remember I wrote out the final scene in Case 7 and the opening of Case 8. I wrote that out because it was very important to me. And I wrote it down.
Yeah,
I wrote it down ages before I actually did it. So when I actually did it and it all came together, I was pretty proud of that.
I usually write stuff down if it's an important scene, just so I can see how rubbish I'm going to write it. I know I've got like 4 weeks to fix it.
Yeah,
it usually takes all of that 4 weeks.
That helps.
I prefer writing, not dialogue. I prefer writing like prose.
I love writing dialogue, but actually right now I find myself at a point where I have to write a lot of dialogue, and I'm trying to psych myself up because I have to be in the right mind to write dialogue.
You got to put yourself in the right spot.
Yeah,
and you're in a lovely part of Brooklyn. Go and sit in a park or something.
Yeah, you're right. I need to go to Prospect Park and.
Yeah, do it. It looks lovely from Google Map thing.
Yeah, it does, but not today because I have to wait for my bed to get here.
I know what's going to happen once you get your bed. You're just going to go to sleep and be like, oh, this was a big day. I'm sleepy now.
I've had a sofa bed all this time.
Exactly. That's what you're going to do. I know.
Which reminds me, I need to take the sheets off of it and wash them before I give them back.
Yeah. Do that. That's a very good idea.
Well, it's any other idea would be rude and inconsiderate. Listen. This is a public service announcement to all of the listeners out there.
It really is.
If somebody comes to stay at your house, or if somebody lends you a set of sheets or an air mattress or something, don't be rude. Wash the sheets. Wash the sheets after you've used them on an air mattress. And if you have sheets on your bed and you're going to let somebody sleep on your bed or something when they come to visit you, wash the sheets before they come too. Because I don't care how clean you think you are, you're not. Now, you're a human being with gases and secretions and sweat. So, yeah.
Now, when you say, wash the sheets before they come. why are you
or laughing? Sometimes after.
I'm just saying that doesn't seem the logical order to me. It doesn't seem the logical order of things to me.
Well, you know.
I thought this was a family-friendly podcast. What's going on here?
Bet. This is for mature audiences only.
Back off, kids.
I'm going to have to put in a little explicit tag on iTunes now.
You know you're funny.
Yeah, I don't even know
how to. We haven't even mentioned the word dicks yet. Oops.
So, how... No, never mind.
Yes.
Yeah. I was... No, the moment's passed now.
Man, I watched a Will Ferrell film. What do you expect from me?
I like John C. Reilly. He's funny.
Yeah, he is.
Even though he essentially plays the same character in every single movie he's in.
Well, he's being typecast as himself.
Yeah, he's basically just big goofy guy from Chicago.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So do you have any games you want to, you like adventure games that you want to get that you haven't played yet?
Oh, sure. I've got a ton of them.
Adventure games?
Yeah, I heard you the first time.
Really? Like what? Have you played Cognition, an Erika Reed thriller?
No, I haven't played it.
I've heard real good things about it, actually.
I've watched it being played, but I haven't played it. But you know what? The story is really intriguing, but
it's not.
Oh.
Why is it not intriguing? Because it's an adventure game. I like solving puzzles.
Yeah, but the thing is that the gameplay gets in the way of the story, it seems. And it just, by episode 3, it just gets kind of ridiculous.
Well, I still want to try it.
Yeah, I mean, might as well, but whatever. Yeah, no, but there's...
I still haven't played, and playing The Inner World made me realize this because the titles are similar. I haven't played The Whispered World yet. What is wrong with me?
Oh, I haven't played that one either. I haven't played any dating games. I played a demo for Deponia.
Yeah, man, I got Deponia and I started also, playing it and it bugged out because I got the CD copy. I have to download it or something.
Also, what was with that tone of contempt with which you said, you haven't played any of Datalix games, as though you were... judging me or something.
I always judge you when you don't play Deadlight games. I think you should play that.
It's the most specific always I've ever heard. I always judge you when you don't play Deadlight games.
Well, that'd be specific.
What you're saying here, right?
It's better than not being. It's better than being wishy-washy.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Anyway,
I've got a ton of games. Look, I still have to play Normality. I'm looking at the box right now.
Yeah, man, Normality is... I haven't finished Normality, but Normality is fun. It's totally different to how I expected Normality to be.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I need to play Realms of the Haunting.
I also need to play The Last Express, which I don't have...
Wow, we've got a lot of... We've got a lot of games to play.
Yeah, man. And so no time at all to play them in.
Oh...
Go ahead, let it out. This isn't a family-friendly podcast anymore.
Oh, shit, you haven't got... I got no time. What am I doing? I'm sitting around doing a podcast. You could be playing a game while you're doing the podcast.
What? That would be rude. I'm not a multitasker, remember?
I'm totally a multitasker. I don't care what anyone thinks.
Yeah, how's your word search going?
Ha ha! Oh, you got me.
I got you.
You really did. Yeah, I can't deny you that one.
Uh-huh.
Man, that was a good word search.
I know. Right, anyway, so...
Speechless, man.
Yeah. Anyway, do we have anything else to talk about?
Man, don't wrap up the podcast. We're having fun. We're having a good time. I'm really enjoying this podcast.
Good. It's a good contrast from last week's where you hated it.
Yeah, last week I was totally paranoid, and everyone liked it, and I think I'm worried now that no one will like
No one's going to like it because you do. That's how it works.
Man, I have the worst... Man, I have this problem with games, you know. I'll get these games that I really like, and everyone's like, oh, you like that game? People think I'm weird because I loved Quest for Glory 5 when I was a kid, but I only played the demo, you know, and...
Man, that demo was so unrepresentative of what the final game was like.
Really?
Yeah, because in the demo you were walking around. First of all, the demo had multiplayer, which...
Yeah, I never played the multiplayer.
Oh, the multiplayer sucked. You couldn't do anything. You could just walk around and find someone else and be like, oh, hi. You couldn't even fight or anything. But the demo had, like, weapons just lying around that you could pick up.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen in Quest for Glory 5. You had to actually buy them from the shop.
Oh, I don't mind buying stuff from shops. I'm not a cheapskate. We're not all Francisco Gonzalez, Jesus.
You hush.
How do you feel about procedurally generated games?
Well, it depends on the game, but I think that it's good. Man, that reminds me, I have Spore. I haven't played Spore in forever.
I never really got into Spore, you know?
I didn't either because, like you said, the first four stages are very repetitive. But
yeah,
the game actually starts when you go out into space. But by the time you get to space, it's like you're so bored from playing the other stuff that you don't really want to get invested in it. But, yeah.
I have a big problem. I have this real dilemma, whereas I want games to be both procedurally generated and fully scripted at the same time.
That's
quite indecisive.
Really
yeah. Because, you know, I've been enjoying Rogue Legacy, as I said, and, you know, I love the idea that every time you play a different dungeon, you play the dungeon, you're playing with a totally different, a random character. Not random, but, you know, partially random. And you're playing a different dungeon to what you've played last time, and the time before that, and the time before that. I love that, you know? But it also annoys me because I like tightly scripted stories, and you never get I've never seen a procedurally generated game with a compelling story.
Let me ask you this. How would you feel if Rayman was procedurally generated? And just as challenging?
I probably wouldn't enjoy it very much because I think Rayman is very, very tightly designed.
Mm.
You know? No matter what you say about Michelin Seller, he gets a really tight sense of design. His sense of humor comes through in design, you know? You get things that you're like, there's no way I'm going to make that, and you make it just, and it feels great, you know? Mm. And I don't think I've ever seen a procedurally generated game managed to get a design quite as tight as Rayman gets it.
Yeah.
So, you know. But yeah, I'd rather play Baldur's Gate than Diablo, basically, you know? I'd rather a game where every section is unique and matters and, you know, screw replay value. I'd rather play a game once and really, really enjoy it than you know. I've been trying to, I love the idea of a game world that sort of writes itself depending on your actions. But I can't see good stories coming out of it at the moment, you know? You know, like unique and funny stories. Don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe well, maybe
there's a challenge. There's a challenge for all the aspiring game designers out there. Make a procedurally generated game with a good story.
And well, it doesn't have to be moving or anything, just like interesting and well written and not just like Steven wants this. Gets this for him, you know. Which game is what games boil down to eventually.
Yeah. Oh man, this to come full circle and then wrap things up because we've been talking too long.
Oh yeah.
You asked me at the beginning why I liked adventure games, and I told you that I liked the idea of inventory puzzles, right?
Yeah.
Well, I also remember I got Dragon Warrior for the NES.
Nice.
It came free with a subscription to Nintendo Power Magazine.
Sure.
And I've told you my story about the horror of Dragon Warrior.
Yes.
But I remember when I was a kid, I had just gotten Dragon Warrior and I had just gotten home from school and I was anxious to try it, but I had to poop. So I went to the bathroom and I was sitting on the toilet and I was reading the instruction manual for Dragon Warrior, right? And I was really excited while I was sitting on the toilet while reading this because the thing that appealed to me most was the idea of the fetch quests. I was like, oh man, this is so cool. This guy will ask me for things and then I'll have to go find it and then I'll have to come back and bring it to him. That's so cool.
I love fetch quests, I'll be honest. I love them.
Which, yeah, but it kind of is an interesting juxtaposition, the fact that I was enamored of fetch quests while I was shitting. So that probably means something.
Maybe. Do you know what? You know what I miss? I miss being a kid. You know how far I live from the city. I live a fair way from the city, right?
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
which city are we talking about? Okay.
So if we went to Perth and my parents got us a game when I was a kid, you'd have like this 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive home, and so I would read the manual of the game before I got home.
Oh man. You saying that just reminded me. I had this random memory today.
Yeah.
You know how I have all my game boxes, and I have a lot of old ones. I remember when I was a kid, I used to, like, when I was a kid, I never really had an allowance or anything like that.
Sure.
But every now and then, my grandmother would give me some money, and I had this big old Tootsie Roll piggy bank thing that was just a cylinder that was looked like a giant Tootsie Roll. And I would keep the money that I was given in that, and you know how a cheapskate I am. I would keep my money.
You are a cheapskate.
Even back then, I would save
money. I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm saying you're very thrifty and economic with your money, which is good.
I know. Well, that's how I managed to move to New York and live
on
my...
Yeah, if you're trying to make it on as an indie, that's really important.
Exactly. So anyway, the point is, even back then, I was like, I would save up my money, and there was this mall. Well, there still is this mall. It's a really big mall. It's like an outlet mall. In fact, it's so popular that a lot of South American, especially Brazilian people, would come specifically to go to that mall and buy cheap electronics and ship them back to Brazil or whatever. But this mall is called Sawgrass Mills.
Sure.
And when I was a kid, when I was like, you know, 12, 13 or so, my grandparents and my mom and I would often, on some weekends, go to Sawgrass Mills. But it was about a 45-minute drive north, because it was in Sunrise, and that's if anybody knows South Florida, which probably a lot of people don't. But anyway, it's 45 minutes north of where I live.
Sure.
So...
Where you lived?
Where I lived. Yes, that's what I said. Where I lived. So anyway, back then,
you're
when
a big
I was...
Boy, yeah.
Yes, I am. When I was 12 or 13 years old, this was like...
Yes, I am.
I'll turn on the webcam and show you. Anyway, so I was about 12 or 13 years old, and so this would have been about 1993,
94. Sure.
So it was still during the quote-unquote golden age of adventure games. So we would go to Sawgrass Mills, and I'd take my money, usually like $20 or $30, which was a lot of money back then.
My word.
And Sawgrass had a bunch of stores. Like, it had an electronics boutique, which before, when it was still electronics boutique, before EB Games. Yeah. But electronics boutique was where you went if you wanted to get, like, a new game, you know, because they still had a bunch of PC games. I remember buying King's Quest VI brand new, and The Dig and The Curse of Monkey Island at that electronics boutique. But there were other stores like KB Toys, which had a bargain bin, and Target used to sell still PC computer games. And so I would go to Sawgrass and I would look at all those stores, and it was always really exciting because it was like hunting, you know. You'd go and you'd be like, oh, what am I going to get today? And I got some of like my most cherished game boxes there. I remember I got King's Quest IV at KB Toys. And I got Willy Beamish at KB Toys, and I got a whole bunch of games. Yeah, so that really brings back some nostalgia thinking about that, like the excitement I used to feel when I was a kid of like getting my money and going to Sawgrass and buying a new computer game. And then like you, the drive home was 45 minutes, so I would open it up and I would like look at all the stuff and I'd get all excited. And then that evening because we'd usually go on a Saturday, so we'd spend like most of Saturday there, and then the drive home, and then I'd get home in the evening and play my new game and like spend Sunday playing my new game. And it was really cool,
man. I remember did you used to get Nintendo Power, did you?
Yes, I did.
I used to get an Australian PC gaming magazine called PC Power Play. I remember the first issue, my mother somehow found it in a thrift store, a secondhand copy of a magazine, which is hilarious to me now. But I read that magazine like a zillion times because it was the only PC gaming magazine. It was the only magazine I had about gaming. So, you know, I still remember all the games in it, you know. And I had Theme Hospital and Interstate 76 and Crash Kill and Destroy. And, yeah.
Oh, man, Interstate 76. I could never get running on any of my computers.
Yeah, it was a real devil to get running. And Interstate 82 was great, too. And I remember Mrs. Cole, we used to go home with her kids sometimes. Like, half the time, Mama would pick us up from school, and the other time, half the time, Mrs. Cole would pick us up from school. Like, we basically shared carpools, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And one day, Mrs. Cole lost her purse somewhere. She's like, oh, man, I lost my purse here. And so my brother and I, like, went trudging through bush looking for it, and we actually found her purse, and it had, like, $70 in it or something. So she like, took my brother to the store and was like, oh, what do you want? And he like, the only thing he knew in the store was, like, the PC magazine. So we got my first ever demo disc. from that. I was like, I read that like a million times. I used to read, and when I finally got an allowance, I used to like spend all of it on this magazine. And I used to read magazines like over and over and over again. And now, like, I'll read a news story once and just be like, move on. Mm. We've become very impatient, I think.
Yeah.
I miss the days where I used to get one PC game magazine and just read it over and over and over and over. But I can't complain because I got my 12-year-old self, and I always say this, but my 12-year-old self would not only be jealous of my games collection, but also be really jealous of my Lego collection. Lego's amazing.
Suck it, 12-year-old Ben.
Yeah, man. 12-year-old Ben, you're a loser. Come visit me. I got all the best games. And I got a PlayStation, which is what 12-year-old me always wanted.
Oh,
I'm living the dream, Mom.
Top of the world, Ma.
Yeah. Man, we've gotten very nostalgic. It's been a very nostalgic, which is fun because I did a kind of nostalgic post about on DOS is good.
Man, your whole DOS is good is a nostalgia based blog.
I love I love a bit of nostalgia.
Hmm.
Man, did you see Morning DOS Talk this morning on Twitter?
No, I didn't.
It's about extra packings in games. I pulled out my old version of Mission Impossible.
Oh,
which has a yellow like binder envelope with a little bit of string and confidential written on it inside, which I love. That's the best thing ever.
That's good.
They don't make them like they used to. I feel like an old man all of a sudden.
They really don't. But we
better shut this podcast down before it becomes just me crying.
Okay, but before that, I just wanted to mention DOS nostalgia. I made Anatoly get. He listened to our podcast and he got self-control stuck in his head, and then he listened to it really loud in his car and he tweeted at me that the people at the McDonald's drive-thru were looking at him funny. I got you, Anatoly.
Anatoly's good value. I really enjoyed the Morning Dust Talk with all that.
Anatoly is good value. He's coming into town on Thursday to go to the indie drink night.
Excellent.
That'll be good.
I did a podcast with that guy, and he got me the other day. He's like, Ben, we should do the podcast because we did the build engine. We should do id Tech 1. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
He's very passionate about these things. It's pretty funny.
He's more passionate about DOS games than I am by a long way. I bow to his might and experience.
And what shocks me, well, that's inconsequential, but what shocks me is that he's so nostalgic about all these DOS games, half of them I've never heard of, and he's younger than me.
Hmm. I'm younger than you. I've heard of a lot of DOS games you've never heard of.
Well, that's true. Which
I'm even more younger than you.
More younger?
Yeah.
Man, what do they teach you kids in school these days?
Hey, don't knock Mrs. Tiller. She was an amazing teacher.
Mrs. Tiller? Was she related to Bill Tiller?
No, not at all.
Damn. Anyway, this has been our podcast. If you liked it, well, great. If you didn't like it, well, fuck off.
Don't! No, we're not open for review. It's our podcast. We put whatever I want on there. This is Blue Cup Tools Radio. We put whatever the hell we want on there.
Okay, fair enough. I'd say follow us on Twitter, but like I said, that's pretty pointless because you probably already do.
And if you don't have a Twitter account,
make one just to follow.
Well, Twitter's pretty nice. Yeah. I know some of you punch, sort of a lot of stuck in the past and don't. They use Skype or Twitter or anything like that. But that's fine. You're still allowed to listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
And you haven't played Barn Runner games yet. So here's the thing, right? My brother once walked in on me playing a Barn Runner game, which is a completely appropriate term to use because he walked in on me during the Naked Big Wheel sequence.
What?
And let's just say my brother never had looked at any games before until I was playing this. And he stopped and he watched me play it for about an hour, which says a lot.
Wow.
Play Barn Runner. It has Naked Big Wheel sequence. I don't know how else I can sell it to you.
You don't need to because you already have. Just with that.
and it has ridiculously well proportioned human beings.
Okay.
If you know what I'm saying.
Boobs.
I'm saying jugs, yeah.
Yes. Goodbye.
And men with big pecs.
What?
Men with big pecs.
Oh. I thought you said something else. Okay.
I did not say that.
Yes, goodbye. I'm waiting on you to say goodbye.
Oh, see ya.